For a short time this evening, we'll be talking about the book of Ecclesiastes. Most of what we're going to be reading this evening will be coming from the seventh chapter. And to prepare our minds to kind of get us started, I'll be reading from chapter 7, verses 1 through 14. If you'd like to read along, that's Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verses 1 through 14. The Bible reads, "A good name is better than precious ointment, and the day of death than the day of one's birth. Better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting, for that is the end of all men, and the living will take it to heart. Sorrow is better than laughter, for by a sad countenance the heart is made better. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. It is better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for a man to hear the song of fools. For like the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of the fool. This also is vanity. Surely oppression destroys a wise man's reason, and a bribe debases the heart. The end of a thing is better than its beginning. The patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Do not hasten in your spirit to be angry, for anger rests in the bosom of fools. Do not say, 'Why were the former days better than these?' For you do not inquire wisely concerning this. Wisdom is good with an inheritance and profitable to those who see the sun. For wisdom is a defense as money is a defense. But the excellence of knowledge is that wisdom gives life to those who have it. Consider the work of God. For who can make straight what he has made crooked? In the day of prosperity be joyful, but in the day of adversity consider. Surely God has appointed the one as well as the other, so that man can find out nothing that will come after him." So to kind of give a little bit of history or kind of a backstory initially, the first six chapters of Ecclesiastes, the one writing shared with us basically as he searches for meaning. We find this in chapter 1 and 2. But later on, we hear about his observations during the course of his search in chapters 3 through 6. So for tonight, and he has repeated his conclusion time again, and that's life under the sun is vanity. Ecclesiastes 1, verse 14 reads, "I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and indeed all is vanity and grasping for the wind. Yet there is good that we can do, that is, provided that we are blessed by God in our works." Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verses 24 through 26 reads, "Nothing is better for a man than that he should eat and drink, and that his soul should enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw was from the hand of God. For who can have enjoyment more than I? For God gives wisdom and knowledge and joy to a man who is good in his sight. But to the sinner he gives the work of gathering and collecting, that he may give to him who is good before God. This also is vanity and grasping for the wind." So in relating to the experiences of his search and his observations, the writer shared a counsel for living life under the sun. For example, the value of friendship. In Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verses 9 through 12, the Bible reads, "Two are better than one, because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, one will lift up his companion. But woe to him who is alone when he falls, for he has no one to help him up. Again, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one be warm alone? Though one may be overpowered by another, two can withstand him, and threefold cord is not quickly broken." Also, we have counsel to learn the proper way to approach God in worship. Moving on to chapter 5, verse 1, the Bible reads, "Walk prudently when you go to the house of God, and draw near to hear rather than to give the sacrifice of fools, for they do not know that they do evil." In the remaining six chapters, The writer continues to share his counsel through a mixture of narrations or proverbs, imparting wisdom designed to make the most of life under the sun or our physical life here on earth. For example, while life under the sun is vanity, how then should we live? He also lets us know that there is wealth of wisdom found in these chapters. There's too much to cover in detail for this evening, but just for a while, we'll be talking about just a few of these. We'll just simply kind of go over the writer's counsel as we make our way through the chapter. But let's go back to verses 1 through 14 of chapter 7. And we find a series of comparisons. And you'll notice the frequent use of a particular word, and that word is better. For example, the writer would have us understand that honor is better than luxury. A good man is better than precious ointment. A good name is better than precious ointment. We can read in Proverbs chapter 22, or learn from Proverbs chapter 22, verse 1, that there's value in a good reputation. And we know that precious ointment during this time was a representation or an indication of luxury. Not many people really had ointments except for those who could afford it, or maybe for special occasions. And so it was more of a luxury item. But even this, it would be better to have a good name. But why is this so? In our daily lives, we can see examples of vanity of wealth all around us. So we may just leave it for someone who is okay with the vanity of wealth. Now, being wealthy isn't wrong in and of itself. As a matter of fact, there's many biblical figures that were great examples of Christians at the time that were very well off. And it's completely okay for us to have the ability to be wealthy, and we shouldn't consider ourselves in the wrong if we are, as long as the blessings of being well off are just that. Those are blessings. But unless God gives us the ability to enjoy it for the right reasons, as long as we're right in heart and in the right, there's nothing wrong with having the ability to enjoy it. But unless God gives us that ability, it's all for naught. A good reputation finds honor before God and men, and benefits us after death. How many people do we know of today that have long since gone from us, that are no longer here, but their reputation lives on? The way we remember them, the way they conducted themselves, the example they left, is still with us. And this is even more so. You know, they say, what's the importance of a name? Well, I'd say it's very important. Especially if that name is one that is written in heaven. So in what time we have in this life is better spent making a good name for ourselves and accumulating wealth. But also, there's an idea that we can learn from this chapter, and that's that our death day is better than our birthday. As I said before, you'll notice that the word better is going to be used quite often. The Bible reads, the day of death better than the day of one's birth. Of course, this assumes one has first made a good name for himself. So how is this so? The day of one's birth is the beginning of many sorrows, in a way. We actually can read this in Job chapter 14 and verse 1. If you can recall and reflect on everything that happened to Job, as Job observed, and he even cursed the day of his birth. But for the righteous, the day of one's death is the beginning of eternal bliss. You know, I've spoken with a few relatives, you know, talked to, you know, Uncle Fred and Alan and Aunt Darlene, and, you know, they sometimes will talk about, you know, being up in the years and how fast time is moving by, and it's only going to be a matter of time before they get even older and maybe not be able to move around as much and things like that. And they actually get to talking about how, you know, they can't wait. They just can't wait for it to be done. You know, they're looking forward to that next step. They're looking forward to their home in heaven. I gotta tell you, that's gotta be a really kind of a good feeling to have. You know, to be looking forward to that next step after this life. And they say those who live a righteous life can look forward to that. They can look forward to their death day. When in all reality, it's just the beginning. The Bible says that they'll enter into peace and rest. We can find this in Isaiah chapter 57, verses 1 through 2. In Philippians chapter 1, verses 21 through 22, the Bible says that they can go to be with the Lord. And in Revelation chapter 14, verse 13, it says they are blessed to be at the rest from their labors. Now, as we talk about the day of our passing, or our last day here on this earth, it naturally leads us to the next bit of counsel found in Ecclesiastes. Verses 2 through 6 in chapter 7 talks about a funeral is better than a party, where the Bible reads, "Better go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting." You know, I bet everybody here loves to go to a party now and then. But everybody needs to attend a funeral now and then. Why? Well, the Bible actually tells us why. It says, "For that is the end of all men. Life under the sun is not forever." Our lives here are very short. But one thing is for certain, we must all pass and face what follows next, whatever that may be. It says the living will take it to heart. So what exactly does this mean? Well, I don't know if many of you have been to a funeral service lately, but I know the last one I went to, it definitely puts our mind into a certain place. A funeral reminds us of the short life, of how short life is, and that death will reach us all. A funeral forces us to face reality and encourages us to prepare for it. Also, sorrow is better than laughter. The writer explains further why it is good to attend a funeral. That laughter may have its place, but sorrow is superior for making the heart better. In Hebrews chapter 12, verse 11, the Bible reads, "Now no chastening seems to be joyful for the present, but painful. Nevertheless, afterward it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it." Everyone likes to laugh. Laughter provides a temporary reprieve from the burdens of life. But sorrow, especially at a time of someone's passing, encourages us to make positive changes. For this reason, the wise person will be found often in the funeral parlor, while the fool would rather spend time at a party. Also, the Bible teaches us it is better to hear the rebuke of the wise than to hear the song of fools. One is likely to hear the rebuke of the wise at a funeral, but at a party they would probably hear these songs of fools. But the laughter of fools is like the crackling of thorns in a fire, and is vanity. So apparently, and I don't have a lot of experience with the terminology, but evidently thorns make a lot of noise when you put them in a fire. If it's the thorns I'm thinking of, it may very well not be. Didn't really look really into that particular word. But they seem to burn quickly, which provide a little heat, and are therefore of little value for what they're used for. But also as a laughter and songs of the foolish. The Bible teaches us the end is better than the beginning. In verse 8 of chapter 7, so this is similar to what we have already seen. That the day of one's death is better than the day of one's birth, but the principle has application to more than just one's overall life. So we ask ourselves how. Well, as we know, with all different aspects of our lives, many projects start with good intentions, but are not completed. Think in your own mind how many projects you've started, how many things you've started to do, maybe plans to do something, but we just don't complete them, maybe not all of them. But it's when they're finished that we can truly look back with satisfaction. Many things begin with grief and difficulty, but only to the end will that joy and peace come. Psalms 126, verses 5 through 6, reads, "Those who sow in tears shall reap in joy. That sow in tears shall reap in joy. He who continually goes forth weeping, bearing seed for sowing, shall doubtless come again with rejoicing, bringing his sheaves with him." So our primary concern should be on how things will turn out in the end, rather than how they may look at the beginning. So to help us kind of keep this in mind and to keep focused on the end, it's good to remember a few things. One, that patience is better than pride. Chapter 7, verses 8 through 9, we read about this in Ecclesiastes. The patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Pride is evil and is of the world. But patience is a virtue to be pursued by the man of God. So why is patience better than pride? Well, we can read in Proverbs that pride leads to contention and destruction. And pride leads to anger, which resides in the hearts of the foolish. We read that in verses 9 of our reading earlier. Also, you can read in multiple books, Proverbs chapter 14, Romans chapter 2, Hebrews chapter 10, and so on, that patience, on the other hand, is indicative of wisdom and necessary to salvation. Also, another great example of wisdom that leads to better living and understanding is that the present is better than the past. We are not to say, why were the former days better? How often do we daydream about the way things used to be? Especially now, right now, with what everything's going on, it's almost pretty hard not to think about the way things used to be. But we're not to be like this so much. We as people often reminisce about, I guess for lack of a better term, the good old days. We often complain about the things that are troubling us now when we talk about the way things were before, and that they were so much better. Well, it warns us that one is not wise in thinking this, because memory has a way of forgetting some of the bad things in the past. Even if one experiences trials in the present, there is cause for rejoicing. We may neglect opportunities for much good in the present by dwelling on the past. Here's one thing I know. When you're driving down the street, you're not going to get too far if you do nothing but look in the rearview mirror. In order for us to know where we're going and to know where we're headed, we got to look. We got to look forward. We can't focus on the past. The writer tells us that wisdom is better than wealth as well. In verses 11 through 12, it says that wealth has its advantages. We all know that money can serve in our daily lives. It even says in verse 12 that money can serve as a defense in life. And also in Proverbs chapter 14, verse 20, it says that money can attract many friends. But how is wisdom better? Well, Proverbs 11 teaches us in verse 4 that riches do not profit one in the day of wrath. The presence of wealth often makes things worse, as a matter of fact. Money in itself is not evil, but the love of money is, and the temptation that come along with it. There's an old saying that goes, more money, more problems. And I can tell you, I have a couple of friends that are very well off, and they seem to have the most drama and the most problems you can possibly imagine. And it's all because they have, I'd say too much, but it's because they have a lot. I'm kind of a fan of simplifying things. It can create all sorts of issues, especially in today's time. For example, married couples that don't get along, if money's involved, how many times have you seen disputes? In regards to friends, when money gets involved, how many friendships have you known that have been completely demolished over a few dollars? Wisdom gives life to those who have it. And wisdom is better because wisdom will make the best use of one's wealth as a defense. Wisdom will help one weather the storm of wrath. The writer also gives us counsel for a better life by saying that resignation is better than indignation. We all know that there are some things that we can't change. God has His purpose, which we cannot change. His purpose allows for both days of prosperity and adversity. We need to deal with these things in the best way possible. We need to be able to, one, enjoy the days of prosperity. Two, in days of adversity, consider what lessons that we might be able to learn from it. And three, it does no good to get angry about things we cannot change. As we saw earlier, or as we read earlier, that there is both time to weep and a time to laugh. So in conclusion, what have we learned? Well, simply that one, honor is better than luxury. Two, your death day is better than your birthday. Three, a funeral is better than a party. Four, the end is better than the beginning. Five, patience is better than pride. Six, the present is better than the past. Seven, wisdom is better than wealth. And eight, resignation is better than indignation. So if any of this seems to sound off, or anything that we read in Ecclesiastes chapter 7 feels off to us, or maybe something that we don't quite understand, we need to bear in mind that it came from one who experienced everything life had to offer, one who found life under the sun lacking, and one who offers counsel from the perspective of wisdom and inspiration. and also one who provides this counsel that we might make the best use of our time under the sun. So as we focus on this, what can we glean from it? Can we accept the counsel and benefit from it? Or, like so many today, and maybe some like us in the past, will we continue to learn the hard way? Possibly even too late. The Bible reads, "He who has ears to hear, let him hear." At this time, we want to offer an invitation to any of those who are subject to the gospel call, or for any of those who wish to receive the prayers of the church, whatever the case may be. Please come forward as we stand and sing the song of invitation.